Hi, I'm Marlena, and I want to welcome you to Marlena, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where for about the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-666-7926. Come on in, sit down, take your shoes off. Give me a call, won't you? Hello, aloha. It's great to be back, and back I am. I'm Marlena, and I'll be with you for, as that other voice just said, about the next 60 minutes right here on ACB Radio Mainstream. Boy, it's good to be back home. You know, you go on these big long trips and things, and then you come back home and you forget everything that you thought you knew before you left. Huh. Well, we are scheduled to have a guest tonight, but right now we are not able to reach that guest. We are trying to reach Lisa Hall. Gary, the board guy, is in the control room, otherwise known as his office, furiously dialing the telephone, trying to reach Lisa in San Antonio, Texas. And so hopefully we will have Lisa on the program tonight. It's been kind of an interesting time for us. Lots to talk about on the vacation, what the cruise was like. Got some interviews with some of the ship's staff, not the least of which was the captain of the ship. And we'll be putting something together for a future Marlena program about kind of cruising and what that was all about, and especially Royal Caribbean, who really do go out of their way to make folks feel good and at home. And we're going to pick up this call because maybe it's Lisa. Hello, with whom am I speaking?
Well, actually, this isn't Lisa.
You're not Lisa.
But this is a friend of hers, and I don't know what her schedule is, but I thought you ought to know that it's been raining. It's been very bad weather here in San Antonio, and she may have gotten caught in it somewhere.
Ah.
So this is Scott from San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
And I know Lisa very well. We're pretty good friends, and but she may have had to go to work. You know, may have had to work today, and then she may have not either at work or some. I don't know where she might be.
Okay.
But it was very, it's been very wet outside today. I think we've had some flooding and stuff. So.
Oh, dear. Well, I hope you guys are all safe and okay.
Yeah, hopefully so. But hopefully she'll reach you. She'll get in touch with you. I'm sure.
Oh, and you know what? You know what? We've got her.
Oh, you do?
We've
got
her.
I guess I'll get off and let y'all go to it.
All right, Scott. All right. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, that's great. It's great to have friends who are so willing to help. And let's pick up Lisa. Do we have Lisa? There you are.
Scott, thank you.
Yeah, finally.
We were getting worried that Scott was painting this horrible weather picture, and we were thinking, oh, dear, is Lisa all right?
Yeah, I am all right. It just been a crazy weather down here.
What's going on with the weather there?
It's been rain. They had closed some roads.
Oh, no.
And it was flooding pretty bad.
Oh, my gosh. But you're home and safe.
Yes, I'm home and safe.
Oh, well, that's all that matters then. Well, welcome to the Marlena program. You came in with a bang.
Oh, great. I've done a lot of writing on my webpages.
Yes, and we'll actually talk about your website as well and make sure that other people can go and visit the website. But first, let's introduce you. This is Lisa Hall, and Lisa lives in San Antonio, Texas. And you are what is the office workers group that you're president of?
It's the National Federation. The National Federation of the Blind has a division called National Association of Blind Office Professionals, and it's a division of the NFB. And I am president of that organization.
And that that group is composed of folks who I would assume do a wide range of tasks.
Office jobs.
Okay.
Wide variety of office jobs, from ranging from sales to management to clerical positions, whether it be secretary, transcribers of all areas, whether it be medical, paralegal. just a wide variety, customer service. Anything that, like if somebody works in an office and they have to train somebody how to use certain programs, like technology trainers, they kind of work in those kind of environments.
Well, that's great. Now, looking at your resume, which I very much appreciate your sending me, it helps me to framework some of my questions as well. It's quite clear that you're very qualified to do this job. One of the two jobs that you've held in your past that I particularly find fascinating are the switchboard job, and you were also a long distance operator for Quest.
Yes, I was.
Can you talk a little bit about that, and then let's lead into how you sort of made the transition from telephone career type jobs to becoming interested in making Braille transcription and possibly proofreading a viable job.
Yes. Well, I wanted to kind of back up here. I was interested in Braille transcription many, many years ago, way back in 1985, after attending my first national convention of the NFB when I went to tour the American Printing House for the Blind. That's how it all started. And I started taking the Braille transcribing course for correspondence when I was in Louisiana. Back then, and of course, I had dragged it out over so many years because it's taken so long to get through the course. At that time, I was working on certification as Braille proofreader, which I'm still not finished yet, but I'm almost finished. And that's what kind of led me into wanting to do something about Braille production. At the time, I started working at Louisiana Association for the Blind for 8 years, where I did some Braille transcribing. And after working there for 8 years, doing a combination of jack-of-all-trades, it's too many to name, I, you know, at that time, upgraded my computer skills and started working with Braille displays, that kind of thing. Went to Louisiana Center for the Blind and continue to do more work in transcribing. Did my first contract in Braille menus. And after completing the Braille the training program at Louisiana Center, then I moved down to Texas and worked for Quest using the Braille display. After having that job for 5 years, I moved on to my current job at Sears as an associate using the Braille display.
Now, what do you do in your current job? What does being an associate at Sears mean?
Well, what I do is I schedule service orders. Customer calls in, they say my dryer's not working. I pull up the customer's record by their phone number. If the computer gives me the information, I'll verify the address. Reading it in Braille, and then if the address needs to be changed, I go into their profile and change it, and I read it back and make sure I have it correct.
So when I call the Sears toll-free number to get something fixed, I might get you.
Yes, you might.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That might. But at this time, I'm looking for a change right now, and that's why I want to go right back into something that I would be much happier in. I have gotten so much complaint in customer service that after a while you get burned out.
Yes, I think people who do customer service are a very special breed of people because you really do hear complaint, 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 and rarely do you hear, hey, that was great, thank you.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, you don't get much compliments, positive compliments, and that's one of the pitfalls in that kind of job, and of course you don't get the kind of schedule you want, which is lead to another reason why I want to switch.
Sure. Now let's go back a bit. You mentioned the Braille proofreading course, which you are almost completed. What does that involve? Talk to us a bit about that first, and then let's talk about the transcription piece. But
okay,
let's say I want to become a Braille proofreader. What do I have to do?
Well, the Braille proofreader, what they would do is they would take the same course that the transcription takes. The only difference is after they don't do all the lessons that are required, like the transcribers would. But the only difference is you would be resourceful in terms of you have to check for additional dots, missing dots, reverse letters, anything to do with grammar, you know, improper punctuation and that kind of thing. And that's an important skill to have. And yeah, really detailed. And you have to look up all the rules that the Braille Authority in North America has laid out. And you have to make sure that that transcriber follows that rule.
So once I take this course, approximately how long is the course?
Usually, that's going to depend on the individual. According to the National Library Service, it says that it takes 9 to 12 months to take the entire course. It could probably go a little faster if they were to take the course through a local organization that provides Braille classes with other transcribers or proofreaders in the group. And there's a great need for proofreaders, and there's a great need for transcribers.
Does the National Library Service certify you then as a proofreader?
Once you complete the test, there's a test that you have to do toward the end of the course, which I haven't gotten to yet, and you get a certificate upon completion passing, provided that you pass it with a score of, I believe it has to be 80% or better in your grading.
That it may sound easy on the face of things, but Braille has so many nuances to it, hasn't it? And it's
there's lot of changes.
Yeah,
a lot of challenges.
What are you keeping up with some of the proposed changes that are happening with BANA right now?
I'm trying to like I say, I'm going through Northwest Vista College in training right now. In textbook formatting, which is not an easy thing for one person to deal with because everything in textbook formatting is very visual.
Mm-hmm.
Maps, charts, illustrations, boxes, and just all kinds of visual stuff. And that's where you would have to have another person, like another transcriber within a group or something that would provide some visual information to try to help make some critical decisions as to whether typographic can be reproduced, in which a blind person can't do right now.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Northwest Vista College program. What is that? Where is that? How long is it?
Sure. So Northwest Vista College is a community college here in San Antonio, Texas. It is part of the Alamo Community College District, and the Braille program I'm in is a certificate program, which people can complete the program within 1 year. The minimum requirement for the program is a high school education or a GED, having of course, being a city in the U.S., it's usually one of the prerequisites for NLS if you were to do it from home. It's good reading skills. Now, I had to take some remedial reading when I was tested, So I had to take some remedial reading in remedial English to kind of get it up to college level. And that was a challenge. It wasn't easy, but it was a challenge. And I had to take small business management. I had to take, I took the student development seminar, which is like a intro to college prep. Just mainly just to make sure I'm ready for college.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of took that as an extra thing. That wasn't necessarily part of the program. But the reading, writing, verbal 1 and 2, typographics, other codes of Braille, Braille formatting 1 and 2, Braille technology 1 and 2, those are the courses. There's about a total of 9 Braille courses.
And you do all this in 1 year?
That's what they say, is, within 1 year, it's what they got on the program. Now, it's taken me longer because I had to take some remedial courses.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to take each level, one at a time. You can't just take level 2 and then start with level 1 because they're going to kind of progress up.
What are the other codes of Braille that are involved in the course?
The other codes of Braille is like a little introduction. Kind of gets you a feel as to what's involved with Nemeth, what's involved with foreign language, what's involved with computer Braille code, what is involved in a little intro to music and Braille formatting and chemistry notation.
Now, your hope is that, or your dream is that, you will eventually do this kind of work as your source of employment. Is that right?
Yes. I have hoped. My long-range goal I like to do is start my own business doing not only Braille transcribing but teaching adaptive technology. But I was suggested through a couple of people that I start to work for somebody first so I can have some kind of reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And out in the blind community and getting the word out and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Before I start doing any things on my own.
Let me just play the devil's advocate here. By the way, before I do that, let me give out the phone number. It is 1-866-666-7926. I'm Marlena, and my guest tonight is Lisa Hall, and we are discussing Braille transcription and proofreading as viable employment for people who are blind. And Lisa is sharing with us right now the road that she's traveled thus far in her long-range plan to actually operate and maintain her own business doing transcription, proofreading, and possibly teaching adaptive technology. Did I sum all that up right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, playing the devil's advocate, you mentioned a few minutes ago that it is difficult for someone who is blind to, let's say, transcribe certain kinds of books. Because
right.
You need help with the tactile graphics, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In terms of being a transcriptionist, how feasible is it for someone who is blind to look at this career as one that might be sustainable?
What I kind of say, this might be a little hard when it comes to doing contract work. If you're trying to see contracts and you're dealing with different companies, a lot of times they may wonder, how in the heck are you going to get the information out? How are you going to organize it in a logical way? And as a blind person, I think you have to be a little bit creative by using all kinds of techniques. If I were to transcribe something, I would check and see if it's available electronically. That would be my first step. If it's not available in electronic form, provided I have to get it from the publisher, then I would try to scan it. But if it can't be scan because it had too many errors that the prints looked bad or whatever, then that's when you have to really get down to having somebody that would read the stuff where you could type it in, or having stuff dictated on tape where you could physically type it in. And if you're going to have something dictated, you got to train the person how you want the information given to you, because you got to get exactly everything, character for character, word by word, perfect. There are, during my trial manuscript, when I was doing this as part of my internship back in January, I was working on a book, Don't Let Anybody Steal Your Dream, is one of my trial manuscript that I had to submit. And I did not realize the publishers have a tendency to make errors in the book.
Yes.
And because we as blind people don't always know that until we start, you know, dealing with it ourselves. And
if the publisher makes the error, you have to make the error too, right?
Well, no, we have to make some decisions as to what we need to do to fix that. Because the braille has to be perfect. It can't have, if it has spelling errors in it, or if it has, you know, punctuation in the wrong place or something, you know, it's something that we have to watch for.
So you would change what was on the printed page if it were incorrect?
Right, like if it was missing a letter, or
that's interesting.
Looked like it had, you know, just minor,
yeah,
minor little things that we look for.
You see, I've always been under the obviously misconception that the braille had to absolutely accurately reflect the print. So if the print had errors, the braille would have errors.
Yeah, well, usually proofreader's gonna, you know, a lot of times they're going to notice the error and they're going to write back to the transcriber and say, hey, you know, too many typos.
Sure.
A lot of times transcribers, that'd be like, you know, transcriber's note or something like that. You know, they would have spelling errors and the proofreader usually write those comments.
Sure. So, okay, so you get the book, you get the manuscript, and if it's not available electronically, you then have someone dictate it onto a cassette or some form of voice dictation, and then you would transcribe it back directly. Is that right?
Right, yeah, transcribe it back. And transcribing can be done in a couple of ways, depending on what type of equipment people may have. You know, for many, many years, braille transcribers have been classified in two different groups. We have those that are certified, that have gone through the NLS program, that have gotten their certificate, and they earn us the certification that, you know, with a good solid foundation of braille skills and proper formatting. Then you got your other group of people that are non-certified that may be working in a school system or some sort, and yet using braille software, they may not be familiar with all the rules and how to properly format stuff. So otherwise, the non-certified transcriber, they would be working underneath somebody that's already trained as a transcriber.
Then once the book is transcribed, what happens to it then?
After that book is transcribed, and once the transcriber has proofread it and find all the errors it could find, then the next step, it goes to a proofreader that's certified to proofread the material. And the proofreader, they can proofread the material themselves. There are other proofreaders that have used copy holders, where they sit down with the print book and the compare between the print and the braille. And if there's any errors, the proofreader will let the copy holder know, and they would make necessary marks, or like in the case of my friend of mine, Mary Donahue, she does a lot of braille proofreading on contract, And what she does is she writes the report and sends the report to the transcriber by email.
So, and hopefully Mary will call in and give us some kind of the other side here of the proofreading piece. But so what you're saying is that a proofreader realistically doesn't have to be physically in the production house where the Braille production is being done?
No, no, not necessarily. Don't necessarily have to. Mary Donahue used to work for Reason 20, and then when they downsized, you know, now she does this on a contractual basis with a couple of transcribing companies here in town, a couple of individuals that have their own businesses. And also she does transcribing out of her own home, and they get the materials, they deliver the materials to her, and then she does the proofreading, then she'll write the report and send it by email to the transcriber.
I see. So would these, and I'm just making some assumptions here because I don't know anything. So
I understand.
and there are people who are saying, you're right, you don't know anything. But in this subject area, I'm just learning as we go here. Would I be making a correct assumption then to say that the major pieces of work, such as textbooks, manuals, things like that, when I see those in Braille, I always see a large house involved, like APH or you know, Stuart, Florida, or
right.
Cleveland, Ohio, or
those,
you know.
Those are your major people that look for large contracts. So they try to go after the big stuff. And for a lot of the smaller things, like your school systems and stuff, they may have only like one student in that school district that needs some kind of transcribing. That's where the transcribers in the home might help in that area.
I see. So it's conceivable that you could certainly do this job from home, but it may equally, to be fair, be possible that you wouldn't be inundated with work all of the time.
No, usually most transcribers work about 4 or 5 hours at a time because it is very detailed. It is, you have to compare between the print and the Braille and make sure everything is exactly right. Is a challenging area, and you're going to have to, there's a couple of organizations, National Braille Association, which I am a member of, and the Braille Authority of North America, and California Transcribers and Educators with a Visually Handicapped, all provide some type of educational seminars that are held at different parts of the country twice a year. And then I just been involved recently with a new organization here in Texas that I'm very proud to be part of. I'm on the board of Braille Transcribers of Texas, and I'm really excited about that, and I am serving as director on the board.
Are there other Braille transcribers in Texas?
Yes, we have some Braille transcribers here in San Antonio, Texas.
I meant to say, are there other blind Braille transcribers in Texas?
There's not any other blind Braille transcribers that I know of. I know that there are blind transcribers in Kansas City, Kansas, at the Kansas School for the Blind, Carol Clark, that I know. There have been a few others, I think, that may be doing Braille transcribing up in Nebraska that I did an interview on. However, Braille transcription is not something that you may have full-time. You may... like in Texas, about this time of the year, I think starting in November, is when Region 20 and Region 4, which is the two major producers here in Texas, like, go after trying to get contracts with these publishers, or they're trying to find out what state's going to choose for the textbook for the following year. And then once they find out what books they're going to do, then it's distributed across the network. After who's going to get what.
I see. So it at least in this stage, it's not really going to be the full-time job, but it certainly is going to be something that people might be able to look at as a supplement to what they do.
Right. That is absolutely correct. I've been trying to educate my counselor on this issue this past week. I told them, I said, I need to kind to not put everything in one basket.
Mm-hmm. What equipment, if I want to become a Braille transcriber, what equipment do I need to have just to get started?
Well, you could do it in a couple of ways, depending on what you have. If you don't have a computer and you have nothing but a Perkins Braille writer and your own 11 by 11.5 inch Braille paper, that will do the work. You have to submit the work in hard copy. No thermoform is permitted. And that's one way of getting it done. If you don't have a freaking Braille writer and you got a 40 cell board slate and stylus, it's another way to get it done. If you do have a computer, you can use a free program called Perky Duck, and it's available through DuckSpraySystems.com. And it's a program that allows you to do six key entry using S, D, F, J, K, L as six dots. And one of the things I would recommend if one person were to do it is have a Braille display, whether it be a Braille light, Braille note, PatMe, to be able to check one's work. Now, with the latest version of DuckSpray, there has been, version 5, a significant improvement. We now, if we read a Braille document on the screen with JAWS, there are scripts now that will read the translated line, which is near the bottom of the screen, and it would read it in a different voice from the grade two characters.
I see. So I'm actually using WindowEyes, and that has been able to handle the translated screen. So what you're saying is that JAWS now allows you to read the actual translated screen, and it doesn't read, you know, 1, 5.
Right.
That's good. That's good. It really
yeah,
does help.
For a long time, we had to go character by character to try to figure out what this is. And I've been trying to push the school to consider getting a Braille display, especially if we're going to have any more Braille people taking the Braille program. Which I'm trying to push real hard for that, but.
Are you the first line person to take this course at?
I'm one of the first. There's another person that's in the program, and unfortunately this semester, one of the problems we have at Northwest Vista College is getting enough students to take the course. We have a real small class, usually 15 to 20 people in a class, and not everybody takes it.
Okay.
Not for everybody.
Well, we've got a caller. Let's bring the caller into the program. Hello, you're with Marlena and with Lisa. With whom are we speaking and from where are you calling?
Good evening. My name's Matthew Dyer, calling from Canton, Ohio.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello. I had a question regarding talking about using computers. Some people use computers, and you were talking about having DuckSpray. There's a new version of DuckSpray that's out that can translate information?
Right.
Okay. I had a question, too, that I'm not sure, just out of curiosity. Is a Braille transcriber, or if you're transcribing stuff, if you were a medical transcribing transcriber, would you be able to use Word to Microsoft Word, write out what you have to write out, and then use Duxbury to translate that text into Braille, or do you have to use Duxbury or some kind of Braille transcribing?
You can do it either way. However, Word has some features that Duxbury doesn't have. Like if you need to put something, let's say you wrote something in uppercase and you need to change it to a lowercase, Duxbury doesn't have that feature.
Right, that's why I was asking about.
Or you can change it to a lowercase.
Right, and that's why I was wondering about Word, because it seems like using Word would make it easier that way, because, it, like you said, if you're coming across something and maybe you're proofreading something, and you say, oh, the word should be in lowercase and not uppercase, and it was already there, you can use Word to edit that maybe, and then fix that so that there's like a feature to build that in maybe. But
yeah, great question. Yeah. Thanks, Matthew.
Hey, no problem.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye. The telephone number to call is 1-866-666-7926. And if you are listening to this any time other than 1 to 2 Universal, which is 9 to 10 Eastern, 6 to 7 Pacific in the U.S., you are listening to a replay, and the phone number doesn't work. It goes directly to a fax machine, which frustrates people beyond belief. So check your watch before you call, and if it's between 9 and 10 Sunday night on the East Coast, 6 and 7 Pacific, or 1 to 2 Monday morning Universal, you're on. Again, the number is 1-866-666-7926. So, Lisa, as you were talking about the different equipment, I was sitting here fondly reminding myself that I actually have a book, The Prophet by Cahil Gibran, which was hand transcribed. And the reason I know that is I can feel the little slate holes, in every four lines,
That is correct.
And when I stop and I think, my gosh, some woman, and her name was Ruth something, it's in the beginning of the book, some woman spent all of this time doing, can you imagine just poking those thousands and thousands of dots?
Yeah.
We've really come
a lot of hours spent doing this kind of service.
We've really come
up. One that leads me to my next area, I just want to kind of briefly touch on, is that transcribers for many, many years have been doing volunteer work. They really have not been paid. And there's a trend now where transcribers are demanding that we get paid for the kind of work that we do.
What kind of
professionalism that we need to have?
What kind of pay scale can a transcriber expect to look at?
Well, it's going to vary. Most transcribers, if they're doing work at home, they may be paid piece rate or piecemeal kind of work. It could be anywhere, depending on the complexity of the material. Could be anywhere from 15 cents a page to 25 cents a page. Could be 50 cents a page. Could be as much as $1 a page or $3 a page. There's no standard in how people are getting paid. The more complicated works, like the music, the topographics, the science, those are the ones that are going to cost more than, let's say, your literary work, whether it be the menus, or the bus schedules and those kind of things.
What do you say to people, again, playing the devil's advocate, because I am a huge user of Braille, and I love Braille, and I will take Braille to my tomb with me.
I agree there.
In fact, I want Braille on my tombstone. Forget the print. Let sighted people figure it out.
That's the fun part.
So definitely playing the devil's advocate here. What do you say to people who say, Lisa, get off it. The future of Braille is dying to dead. People don't want to learn it. This is not a viable road to go down. What do you say?
Braille is here to stay. I don't think it will die. It would be the same as it would be in print. When a sighted person reads print, a blind person should be reading Braille. That's about as equal as I could be. Now, well, because of the use of computers, you know, sighted people use computers. But I don't think Braille is going to go away. What one of the sad things is, and we have this statistics that have been, it's kind of grim for a long time, where back in the 50s and 60s, no matter how much vision you had as a blind person, you had to learn Braille. That was the only thing, because large print wasn't available. Well, now, with the advent of technology, a lot of the special education people and everybody said, well, because of all the technology, you don't need Braille. But I think that's looking bad. Only 10% of blind people know Braille. Out of the 10%, there may be about 90% of them that are using it on their jobs. It's very expensive in doing business in Braille production. That's one of the drawbacks. Equipment for Braille displays and Braille printers are very expensive. But a lot depends on how fast of a Braille printer you want. The more Braille production you do, you're going to have something that's fast. But if you're not going to be doing a whole lot, you may not need something that's very fast.
Don't you think that the consumer groups, you are in the NFB and I am in the ACB, so we can sort of represent here, at least in this conversation, both groups. And I think this is an issue upon which both groups very strongly agree, that Braille is critical. But don't you think that we as consumers and as so-called leaders, quote-unquote, need to find a way to recharge and challenge our colleagues who, for whatever reason, have either set Braille aside, or some of our newly blinded colleagues who don't have another reason, like a physical reason, why they can't read Braille? I mean, are we falling off the mark as leaders in this community by just sort of touting the line that both you and I say, but how do we as leaders go back and make this happen? Get Braille to be an exciting, fun, challenging thing.
I think a lot has to do with, you know, a lot of the VI teachers and people that go through the college level course. When they learn Braille, they may take maybe like 2 courses of Braille in a couple of semesters. Well, in our Braille program, it takes more than just 2 semesters.
Sure. And it took
the well-rounded stuff that we're doing.
And it took us as kids longer than 2 semesters.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I can remember starting out with grade 1 Braille in the first grade, and then in the second grade going to something they called 1.5. I don't even know if they have that anymore.
No, that's not the case. I started learning Braille as a kindergarten. In fact, I was learning some of my grade 2 Braille in kindergarten.
See, I didn't get to grade 2 Braille until I was at the end of my second grade, going into my third. So, but I mean, the point is that it does take longer than 2 semesters, and so many of these VI teachers are sighted people, which is fine.
With their
but
eyes. They don't read it with their fingers, and a lot of times, not all of them, but some of them are incompetent, and a lot of times they may go several years without not having a blind student who needs to learn Braille.
So
it gets a little rusty.
So how do we, from the 2 consumer groups, what the heck can we do to stimulate that interest in Braille?
Well, I think we need to do more community awareness within, you know, and try to get more sighted people, you know, interested in braille transcription if they want to, you know, help us do this kind of stuff. One of the things that the American Foundation for the Blind has done, they've done a survey back in 2000, and it's posted on the AFB.org site, where they did an extensive study on the production, the training needs of Braille and that kind of thing. And there's a lot of different things to consider. You know, if a person likes to work independently, if they like to deal with detail, make sure everything is accurate, and likes to, you know, work with that kind type of material, it might be the right thing. But if a person likes to be social, being around a lot of people and moving around, you know, like, then it may not be the right one.
Sure. We have a call. Let's bring the caller into the room. Hello, caller. You're with Marlena and Lisa. With whom are we speaking, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Kelly Sapercha from Mortlach, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Well, there's a familiar voice. Hello, Kelly.
All right.
How are you doing tonight?
Just great.
That's good. Actually, I just wanted to say that when you were talking about that course there regarding the proofreading and transcribing, I'm taking something similar, actually, at the moment, a correspondence course from the CNIB, actually.
Now, when Lisa described her course, how does yours differ, or how is it similar from the CNIB?
Well, I haven't really got that far into it. I mean, I'm sort of, I guess, halfway through. It sort of sounds almost, I think, what sort of like what Lisa's taking there. It's very similar anyway. Looking at the table of contents in the book, I see that they cover different things later on, like how to transcribe plays and various things into Braille and all that.
That's right.
So, Lisa, you learned that as well?
Yeah, and all of the instruction manuals in 5 Braille volumes, and the proofreading manual is only 1 Braille volume, but it's a lot slimmer than the rest of the stuff. And then there's another book, the English Braille American Edition, 1994, revised 2002, and that's also in 1 Braille volume, and that has all the rules pertaining to that. Now, in addition to that, I have 2 books that are available in Braille. One is Quick Reference Manual for Braille Formatting, which is in 2 Braille volumes from National Braille Association. And then I have another book. It's in 12 binders, Principles of Print from Print to Braille, and it has to do with textbook formatting.
So it certainly sounds like there's a lot of technicalities that you...
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I have you...
There's a lot of other resources that are out there.
Well, I have you both together, Kelly and Lisa. Obviously, 2 people who are at least exploring the transcription route. What do you guys think, if anything at all, of some of the changes to the Braille code which are being discussed and being implemented? What might be some good things? What might be some things that you may would have liked to have seen shake out differently?
Well, regarding the new the UEBC, you know, the Unified Braille Code, whatever they're calling it, my major concern to that. Now, this is going actually strictly speaking as a reader, but I'm kind of worried that I'm going to have to, you know, basically learn a whole new code or something. I'm not that familiar with it, although I do have a couple of brochures on it. But that's really my main or major concern is, I mean, you know, I don't mind learning new things, but it's almost like, you know, having to learn something all over again, you know.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Lisa?
My own opinion, based on what I have observed and what was being proposed on the UEBC, I think what they were doing is trying to make it easier for people to learn Braille, for those that might be coming behind us. I don't think there's going to be much of a drastic change. They may have something like certain words like the T-O sign, instead of it being next to a word where it would be spelled out, or instead of having two words together like with A, that they may end up spacing it out or something. I'm just kind of guessing. I don't know what Banner has completely decided. I think they're still trying to figure out if this would be something that we would adopt in the U.S.
Okay, well, and that's certainly something that that I'm interested in following and may do a program on, actually. So you guys stay tuned. Well, thanks for calling, Mr. Kelly.
You're welcome.
I look forward to it, and it's nice to hear your voice.
It's great to be here, and I just also wanted to say that I totally agree. Braille is here to stay.
All right. Can't dispute that.
Oh, no.
Thanks, Kelly.
Yep.
Good night.
Yep, good night.
All the way from Saskatchewan, Canada, where it's very cold.
Yeah.
We've got about 52 minutes past the hour, so we would have time for one more phone call at 1-866-666-7926. My guest this week is Lisa Hall, and need to apologize to Lisa publicly. We initially scheduled her for today to begin with, and then I thought, oh, well, we could do it on the 17th, which was the first date that I was home from my trip, and I didn't tell Lisa that we would do it on the 17th, except that I announced that we would, and then I got sick. So, and I'm still sort of coughing and trying not to cough in people's ears here. So, I'm awfully glad that we were able to put this together tonight after all that. Tell me a little bit about your website. How can people, first of all, how could people contact you if they've got some transcribing they might like you to do? And what might they find out on your website?
My website is http://home.satx.rr.com/Lisa Hall.
Boy, that's a long one.
Yes, it is. It's got a lot of information on there. Braille is my primary thing that I put on there, educating not only blind people but sighted people about Braille. Resources where Braille books can be transcribed, naming different agencies. I put different links to the Library of Congress reference material. I also put links to where people can learn about resources for literacy and learning Braille, including the correspondence course. It's got a packed lots of information, Braille translator sources with Braille translators. I also have a place where there's all the different access technologies that are available, and I also have places where you could get electronic books on the site.
Can people email you if they want some more information?
Sure, they can send me an email. My email is LHall@satx.rr.com.
So that's LHall10@satx.rr.com?
Yes.
Okay, great. So to kind of sum things up here, Braille transcription is your goal. You want to become a Braille transcriber. It is taking A lot of work, a lot of study, a lot of
stick-to-itiveness. A lot of hard work.
I
got this certificate. I'm very thankful for the Library of Congress. It's taken a lot of effort. I submitted on March and found out 2 months later after about two or three phone calls that I passed it, 90 out of 100.
Congratulations.
And I finally got the certificate in September 3rd of 2004, finally.
Well, congratulations. That sounds like an accomplishment. And it, you know, it may not be the right job for everyone, would you say?
That's correct.
You know, the larger houses probably employ their own in-house staff, so a good deal of what you will work on is contract work.
Right. Most of them's contract work. Some may be doing some stuff for school districts, but school districts might be a little hard because a lot of times school districts be looking for somebody that's doing more than transcribing. They're looking more like a VI assistant or something like that.
Sure.
A lot of times school districts have listed like Braillists. The Braillists, they want them to do everything.
Handling materials. Yeah.
Researching all of that.
It goes a lot further than just producing them dots, doesn't it?
Right, and I've gone through two interviews with Northeast Independent School District, but no offer yet.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, I wish you the very best on this journey, and on behalf of blind people, thank you for doing what you do to help keep Braille alive.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a critical piece of it, is that we all get our hands into this Braille pot and make the contribution that we feel we can best make to help keep Braille alive, whether that's being a Braille reader, being a Braille transcriptionist, or a Braille proofreader, whatever it is, you're supporting Braille.
Yeah, and I think we should promote Braille. We should promote it big time.
Absolutely.
Because it's American with Disabilities Act, and a lot of businesses are not, including employers, they don't know. They don't want to spend the money.
That's right. And Lisa's email again is lhall10@satx.rr.com. And I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight, Lisa, and we'll have you back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
This is Marlena Lieberg on next week's program. Get ready for your scary ghost stories. I will be looking for interesting, wild, crazy stories. Can blind people see ghosts? Could that be true? I'm Marlena. It's great to be back, and I'll look forward to talking with you all next week. In the meantime, have a great week. You've been listening to Marlena on ACB Radio. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. But in the meantime, if you've got an idea for a future show, why not drop me an email? The email address is Marlena, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, @acbradio.org. Thanks to Dave Williams, director of ACB Radio, and most of all, thanks to you.